Welcome to a series of netcasts brought to you by Yale University.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Yale Cancer Center Answers, where we provide you with up-to-date information on cancer care and research. Our host, Dr. Anish Chagpar, is Associate Professor of Surgical Oncology and Director of the Breast Center at Smilow Cancer Hospital. She interviews some of the nation's leading oncologists and cancer specialists who are on the forefront of the battle to fight cancer. If you are interested in past editions of Yale Cancer Center Answers, all of the shows are posted on the Yale Cancer Center website at yalecancercenter.org. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu. Here's Dr. Chagpar.
Welcome to another episode of Yale Cancer Center Answers. I'm Dr. Anish Chagpar, and I'm joined today by my guest, Dr. Xavier Lohr. Dr. Lohr is an associate professor of medicine in digestive diseases and the medical director of the colorectal cancer prevention program. In addition, he's also the co-director of the cancer genetics and prevention program. He's here with us today to talk about the genetics of colon cancer. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me.
So, Dr. Lohr, maybe we can start off by you telling us a little bit about who you are and how you fit into the bigger Yale family.
Sure. So I'm a gastroenterologist, and my interest is in colorectal cancer, and particularly colorectal cancer genetics. And my interest actually started when I started doing my basic science research, which was on the molecular mechanisms of colorectal cancer, and that really drove me to get interested in clinical cancer genetics. And as the field has exploded and we got much more information, and we can actually do things that make a difference with that knowledge, this interest has been evolving towards more and more taking care of these individuals and families who have these conditions. So here at Yale, we decided to put together all the different fields in cancer, in clinical cancer genetics, to really have a comprehensive approach and care for all these families, not only GI or colorectal cancers, but also the other ones that are common, such as breast, ovarian, or urinary tract, for instance. So those are the common ones that they have genetic defects that are responsible for a significant number of cases. So that's why we just got it all under the same umbrella. So really to make them this place a home for these families with these particular issues.
So let's talk a little bit for our listeners, just as a level set. You know, a lot of people these days get a bit confused, I think, between the concept of cancer genetics and cancer genomics. So the idea of genetic mutations that you may be born with that predispose you or increase your risk of developing cancers versus unlocking the cancer genome and seeing which genes are turned on and turned off that may affect targeted therapies. So which one do you look after, and talk a little bit more about those differences?
Sure. So yes, so I think you put it very nicely. So one of them is the ones that we have mutations that we have in all the cells of our body, and those can be inherited, and those are the ones that cause what we call cancer syndromes. Those are the ones that we take care of in this colon cancer, cancer genetics and prevention program. So the problem with those is that, again, we can pass this mutated predisposition to cancer to a next generation, and with all the problems that that come along. The other side that you are mentioning is becoming increasingly important, which is looking at all these genetic alterations that are happening in the tumor itself that are really being extremely helpful in trying to figure out how we better, more precisely treat those cancers according to the particular types of mutations. So they're very different things that do have, of course, a common theme, because when you have some of these mutations that you carry in all the cells in your body, they also determine how you will develop those cancers. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, it's two different sets of information that we use that were extremely useful in both cases, but for different reasons.
Right. So really today, we're going to talk about the first, which is mutations or mistakes in the DNA that you have, that you're born with, that are in all of your cells that predispose you to developing cancer. And for many patients, when they think about that concept, they think about breast cancer, and maybe that's my own personal bias, but they think about people like Angelina Jolie. But you do colorectal cancer, and perhaps people aren't so aware of some of the genetic syndromes that predispose to colorectal cancers. So talk a little bit about that and what people might be thinking about in terms of their family history, because as you said, these are often inherited, that would make them think that maybe they may be carrying one of these mutations.
Sure. So I think you really got the point here, which is there's a very high level of awareness about breast and that percentage of cases that are due to mostly BRCA gene mutations, but there are some other genes too, but mostly those ones. And I think that we've learned a lot about it, and there's much better level of awareness, and we are identifying them more often. Interestingly, with colon cancer, the percentage of cases that are due to these type of mutations is very similar to breast cancer. Mm. Yet, there's no such a generalized belief that this is happening. So I think that the colon cancer lobby should do much better because we have not done such a good job as the breast cancer lobby in really in spreading the word and making people understand that. So what are signs that can make you a little bit suspicious for a potential colon cancer hereditary syndrome? Number one, developing a colon cancer at a relatively young age, which same thing for breast, for instance. It's more common to develop one of these cancers at a younger age, let's say younger than 55 or so, than if it is a sporadic case. Usually sporadic cases are individuals are older. So that is one of the suspicious factors. Another one is if there are several family members who have not only colon cancer, but some other cancers that could be in the realm of a syndrome. So just having several cancers in different family members, that could raise a level of suspicion, particularly some of those individuals are young at diagnosis, as we were saying, younger than 55 or so. There's no real clear cutoff. But those are all cases that they should make us think about it. And certainly anyone who does have some of those issues that we talked about, they need at least to be evaluated and considered for further analysis and testing if appropriate. But again, I think that we do have to do a much better job in raising awareness of these syndromes in colon cancer, because the frequency, again, is pretty similar to breast, yet most people still ignore that fact.
Yeah. So the other question that people may be asking is, you know, so I've got a family history, and let's suppose that there are, you know, multiple generations of multiple people with colon cancer and maybe some pancreatic cancer or other cancers thrown in there, and everybody's getting cancer younger than 50, and people may have a suspicion that maybe there's something going on in their family. But they may ask, why should I go and get genetic counseling or genetic testing? What will that do aside from confirming to me that I'm already at high risk? So are there things, whether it's increased surveillance or prevention measures, that can be taken in people who have colon cancer that would be available to them if they knew that they had a hereditary mutation?
Exactly. I think that's a great point, which is what you do with information that you don't know what to do with. Mm-hmm. So we fortunately have passed on that step, and we really have very effective measures to prevent cancer in these families and these individuals. So certainly knowing the information, it informs us to do certain things that make a huge difference in terms of both development of cancer and cancer-related mortality. So yes, knowing in this case more than in any other cases, knowledge is power, because it makes a big difference in terms of really decreasing dramatically the risk of developing cancer, or at least catching them early enough so they won't have a significant impact on people's life. So it does certainly make a big difference. Another issue, an important aspect that young individuals ask us, which is the possibility of of embryonic testing, so pre-implantation. Therefore, if you have if you want to have a family, but you do have one of those mutations, and as you know, the majority of those cases, it's 50% chances of passing it along. If you could actually select the embryos that did not get that mutated gene, therefore you can eliminate the risk of passing it to the next generation. That's really, that motivates a lot of people, and it is really also a good reason to test if someone really chooses to do so.
Yeah, which brings me to another question that many people ask, which is, well, what's the cost? What's the cost of genetic counseling? What's the cost of genetic testing, especially now that we're not just testing often for a single mutation, but we might be doing what's called a panel? And maybe you can talk a little bit about what a panel is and when you use that. But what's the cost of that? And what's the cost if somebody does want to test their embryos? Mm-hmm. Because all of this, you know, especially in the current era, may or may not be covered by insurance. So can you talk about that a bit?
So I think the good news is that this is right now totally mainstream in terms of healthcare. It's like any other type of medical intervention, and that's how it's viewed. Of course, it's extremely difficult in our environment to figure out what insurance and what plan is covering what. There are co-pays and all sorts of things, but it's no different from any other tests nowadays, or the consultation costs are no different from any other ones that you may have. So they're really part of the mainstream medicine. In terms of the testing itself, the genetic testing itself, it's the same thing if the assessment done by the people who specialize in this, if we feel that it's appropriate to test because the risk is high enough, for the most part, they'll be covering it. If there's a discrepancy, there may be issues about that. Though there are ways to get around that nowadays, because there are many labs who've been doing more and more genetic testing. The costs have gone down dramatically, and also the technology has allowed that cost to go down dramatically. So nowadays we're facing that there are some labs that we can test a panel of genes, and we'll talk in a minute about the panel of genes, who are testing for $200 and $250. Mm-hmm. So many individuals actually may choose to go that route, because even if they have insurance, their copay may even be higher actually, yeah, than paying out of pocket that amount. So I think the good news is that the economic barrier of testing is totally has become almost negligible, and that is the good news. So I think that no fears in terms of that. In terms of the testing for embryos and all that, I can give you an answer. I think it does vary a lot, and I think the best thing is just to ask a little bit around and see what we're getting. And again, the insurance companies may really have very different approaches, as they have to almost everything. Yeah. So it's a little bit complicated to give a straight answer.
So one question, just to circle back to, has to do with the counseling piece. And, you know, in the early days, and there's been a lot that's changed since the Supreme Court decision back in, I guess it was, 2013, where there was a big campaign against Myriad Genetics, who had patented the BRCA genes, and there were protesters, as many of our listeners remember, on the Supreme Court steps to take back our genes, and the Supreme Court rallied behind that. But in that circumstance, prior to that, there was a lot of direct-to-consumer marketing. And now it seems more and more insurance companies are really mandating the genetic counseling piece. Mm-hmm. So, and I think that particularly given the complexities of genetics and the complexities of panels and so on and so forth, understanding what a variant of uncertain significance is and so on, that genetic counseling piece is truly critical. Can you talk a little bit about that piece and what exactly that is and why it's so important? Or maybe I'm wrong, it's not so important, but...
No, I think you're right. I think you hit it right. It is. I think it is extremely important. Yes, commercial laboratories, and some of them more than others, have really pushed very hard for any type of provider to order testing and all that. And the problem is that they often are not equipped in terms of how to handle the information that's given back to them. In a way, it's like every other test. If you order any test in medicine, you have to have a reason to order it. You can't just start ordering scans in the body all over the place just because, just to see if you find something. So it's the same kind of thing. It has to be an informed decision. It's like, why are we looking for this? And what's the reason why we're looking for this? And here, that counseling process is determining more now than ever before because of what you mentioned, that right now we are testing more and more genes, often in these panels that we have several genes. And the reason for panel testing is truly because the technology is allowing us to do that. And it's cheap, even cheaper than targeted testing of a particular gene. So there's no point. But as you said, also, there's a lot of, in many occasions, we get back, and it's about 20 to 40% of cases, we'll get back reports saying, well, this particular gene has this variation that we really don't know how to handle because we don't know if it's causing disease or not. And that's a big challenge. And that's where the a good informed professional can help here. And now with that type of information, we really incorporate the whole picture, the whole information of the family history and all that, and really determining which way we are going because we are still lacking information in those variants. So that's the kind of exercise that it's very difficult to almost impossible to be done at a primary care provider office or anything like that because it's become sophisticated and a little bit complex. So I think that that counseling process, that very well-informed process is essential to avoid misunderstandings and to give the right information back to the patient so we can really do the right thing.
Yeah. And the other nice piece about the having your genetic counseling and prevention done at a center of excellence is really that those are the professionals who are on top of the literature. So they know what tests to order, when to order them. But when the information on what the significance of those variations comes to be, that they then are the first to know that and so can pass that information along.
Absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. This is a very fluid situation where we keep getting new information, and we have a lot already, but we keep learning constantly, and new information often has a very important impact on how we're handling those patients and families. Therefore, yeah, I think doing this in centers of excellence does make a lot of sense.
Yeah. So if a patient were to have, for example, a variant of uncertain significance today, tomorrow, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, the significance of that variant might come to be known. And so then they could call you back and you could say, well, guess what? Now we know the significance of this.
Exactly. The information keeps evolving. And the key for this information evolving is that many, many more families keep getting tested and we're able to put together that information. Plus, lots of lab-based studies that are also being done to determine if the mutations that are being described or changes in the genome that are described do really have a meaning, do really carry the risk of cancer that we suspect.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, at the top of the show, one of the things we said is that the colon cancer advocates really need to get the word out about hereditary colon cancer and the importance of genetic counseling for colon cancers. And I hope that this show has done a little bit to raise some of that awareness. So if we have listeners who hear this show and they think, geez, I've got this family history, this is something that I want to learn more about, how do they contact you, Xavier?
Sure. So they can actually Google Smilo Cancer Genetics and Prevention Program, and they would see the webpage with plenty of information and the way to contact us. But I can give you also the number, which is 203-200-4DNA.
Nice.
So that's a number that anyone can call.
Just give us that number one more time.
Sure. It's 203-200-4DNA.
Perfect. Excellent.
So the when patients, individuals call, we'll start with a brief interview, and that would be like our way to triage the information initially. And if we believe that that's someone who really needs to be evaluated in our program, we'll email them a link where they can click and they go to an online questionnaire. So patients do fill up a questionnaire online, and we get on our side a preliminary family pedigree. And when patients come to the clinic, we review that pedigree, we complete it, and we go over everything, and then we end up coming up with a final assessment. And that's when we recommend if we need to do testing or whatever we think that it needs to be done.
Well, what a fantastic service to have here at Yale Cancer Center. Thank you so much for joining me, Dr. Lohr. This was such a wonderful discussion on the genetics of colon cancer and the work that you do. Until next time, this is Dr. Anise Chagpar wishing you all a safe and healthy time.
This has been another edition of Yale Cancer Center Answers. We hope that you have learned something new and meaningful. If you have questions, go to yalecancercenter.org for more information about cancer and the resources available to you. We hope that you will join us again for another discussion on the progress being made here and around the world in the fight against cancer.